At least in our circles, I don't know how the rest of the scholarship would view this, but the landmark work on this is Christopher Mitchell's dissertation. Now, Christopher Mitchell is a graduate of this institution, but before he came here, he got a doctorate at the University of Wisconsin-Madison in Semitics, and his dissertation was on the root Barach and speech act theory. So he was investigating specifically how the function of language is to be understood relative to these verbs of blessing. How does blessing fit into this? Very question that you're raising here. And I had occasion, Andy, to look at that as I was writing the thing on pragmatics for my hermeneutics. And he's got some very interesting stuff. And I think it's probably worth just perhaps summarizing in this regard, because he brings up, by the way, the whole business of Genesis 1. And I think, you might say a short summary of speech act theory when it comes to performative utterances. And you had a good one there. I pronounce you man and wife. Or another performative utterance would be a promise. If I say, I promise to pay you $10, my saying that, this is not a description of what's happening. It is my actually committing myself to do something. Now, as Mitchell points out, and as other people have pointed out too, in order for there to be a valid speech act, you've got to have three things. You've got to have the right person saying the words, you have to have the right recipients of the words, and you have to have the right context for the utterance. So, for example, to take your example of the marriage, if the priest says, I pronounce you man and wife, and he is bogus, or he's not a judge, and he's just pretending to be, in fact, you're not married. It has misfired in that sense. If you have a genuine priest marrying a man and woman, but it's being done on a movie set, you're also not married. Why? Wrong setting. And of course, now this next point is a point of contention, especially in a place like California. Can you marry two guys? Well, see, if the recipients of this are not proper, it's not valid either. And of course, that's the kind of thing that's being argued in the courts with this. But the point that Chris makes, rather interestingly, is with the blessing, and indeed this is also true of Genesis 1, God's word creates with that jussive. God's word blesses with the jussive because all of the three factors are in order. It's the right guy doing it, and Andy, you pointed this out at the end of verse 27, that he says, I will bless him, not the priest. See, the right guy doing it, the right words being spoken over the right people.
I think the fact that the right guy is also the priest.
Right, right.
This doesn't really work if someone without the office would be saying it.
Right. Well, that's exactly right. But to go to the Genesis 1, and I was kind of thinking there, it works for God to say, let there be light, and there is light, because the creator of the world is God, and he's the right guy saying the words. See, and it's the same thing here. Of course, now we're going to get into the whole Shaliach Apostolos business, that when an apostle bestows, when the priest bestows the blessing, that's right. If all of a sudden you have these renegade outfits going on, then you have something different completely.
Could you transfer this entire discussion to the words of institution? It seems to me that's an analogous situation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that whole debate when kids play in the backyard,
right,
and play Holy Communion, which mm-hmm. pastors' kids are known to do on.
Or even baptize.
Yeah, or baptize.
Or baptize, yeah.
Yeah.
No, and I think that's right. Now, obviously, there are shades of gray in every approach. However, what you're pointing out, and I think this is correct, is that essentially you cannot come down on some strict ex opere operato side. You've got to have all of these factors going. If you baptize a cat, it's not like the cat's going to heaven. It's the wrong person who's the recipient of this.
I had someone in a parish actually, remember when those Cabbage Patch dolls came
out? Oh, yeah.
Right. Papers, and you really they baptized all our Cabbage Patch dolls.
I hope.
And they were dead serious about that because they wanted their children to understand that this is important to bring these people into their family.
Well, when you approve that, I hope they gave you a big Christmas present.
Yeah, you know, it's tough. You just want to say, look, this is stupid. But they really yeah. thought and they had some sort of cogent argumentation.
Yeah.
But this isn't as
I think there are difficulties with speech act theory, but not here. Not in performative utterances. I think the analysis of regular utterances is not quite accurate, but they have pointed out the difference between performative utterances and simple statements or questions and so on. And in that, I think it's extremely valuable that we take a look at that. So take a look at Christopher Mitchell's thesis if you're interested further. It's in our library. Okay, it's Luke 2:21. Abandoning the new covenant there, are we? Yes, he goes out without noticing. All right. Marcion will get you. Yes. And this is right after the famous Christmas story. Remember, the Christmas story read in King James is what most people think the King James Version really is. They forget about all of the passages such as superfluity of naughtiness and things like that. And they just remember, you know, there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed, as if that's sort of the essence of King Jamesism. Now, in 21, we do have the circumcision and the naming of Jesus, which is January 1st, 8 days later. And I heard, as I was going to get my food there, Andy, I heard you talking about how we celebrate New Year's and such differently than the world, and I think that's an awfully important observation here. The chief, of course, is that our observation is not centered upon ourselves, but upon him, who he is, and what that means for us. Now, there's some excellent Greek construction here. There's only one verse, but it's going to be worth taking a little bit of look at this because it's Luke getting on his grammatical high horse here. Kai hote epleistheson hemerai octo. And when they were fulfilled. What? Days eight. Well, is that Hebrew enough here? You've got the verb first. You've got the adjective following the noun. He's in his Septuagint mode here, and doing a nice job. Now, epleistheson, that is the aorist passive from that old me verb pimplemi. Pipplemi would have been maybe a little easier to see. That me came in there, and that pim at the front goes out for all other forms except the first principal part. Then you get pleiso, epleisa, and thus epleisthein. 8 days were fulfilled. You know, this is a very common word for filling. You'll notice that there's a flag on the play on this, to quote Andy. And in Theta and 33, they read epleirotheson, which is a little bit more pregnant with meaning kind of word. That's the word that's normally used for fulfilling promises or fulfilling the scriptures. This is just kind of coming to its fullness or end or something like that. And I think Luke isn't particularly making any point here.
8 days
passed. 8 days passed, yeah, right. Then, to peritemein auton. And when 8 days were fulfilled, to circumcise him. Now, peritemein is from peritemno, and it's an aorist, so-called aorist active infinitive. You can see with the accent there, it makes it look like a contract verb accent. And the to is, it's very Septuagintal. To plus the infinitive being the equivalent of the simple infinitive. This would be in the terms that we've analyzed here of infinitive usage. You'd say this is epexegetical. 8 days were fulfilled with respect to what? with respect to circumcising him, kai eklethein ta anima autu Jesus, also was called his name Jesus. Now, that's a little bit awkward there because it seems like we've got too many words. As a matter of fact, if you look, there's another flag on the play here, and the chi is omitted in Theta Family 13 and a few others, and D just takes both of them out and has onomaste, the name was named. And so it goes something like this. And when the 8 days were fulfilled, his name was called Jesus. I think this is a kind of a mixed construction, as he often does after agenita. It happened and something happened. So when the 8 days were fulfilled, that they circumcise him. To circumcise him, also his name was called Jesus, if you're going to take the chi that way.
It's a
yeah.
Huh?
No, but the reason I'm saying, though, is you wouldn't use a while consecutive, I don't think, if you didn't have another independent clause, would you?
Well, you'd use the infinitive as the temporal clause.
Right.
In the fulfilling of the day.
In the fulfilling.
And I think they've used the hot day in that. I mean, I think it's just kind of a perversion of it.
Right.
How it got slipped from
right. But I mean, would they say in the fulfilling of the days and?
Yes.
Okay, then that's the explanation for it. He's just got his Septuagint coat on here. Okay, well, that's precisely the thing. And see, you notice D takes that out, and D does tend to try to expunge Hebrew kind of syntax every once in a while. So that'd be an example of that, right. So, and of course his name was called, or as D, as his name was named, is certainly going to fit into our Old Testament scene as well, was named Jesus. Now, you'll notice that Jesus is nominative, not accusative. And that's because this is a predicate accusative construction that has been transformed into the passive. Now, that's a mouthful, but let's do it like this. Supposing we added active. You will call his name, I'm active now. You will call, kaleo, his name, Jesus. Now it will be ta anima Yesun. His name is Jesus. That's a predicate accusative. When I now take the word name and put it into the nominative as the subject of the passive verb, now that second accusative trails right along because it's a predicate, and it's going to adjust its case to onoma. Onoma has now become nominative. It becomes nominative. So his name, that always is a confusing looking thing because you'd think it should be accusative there, but it's that predicate accusative construction which always follows what the lead noun does there. So eklethe, third person singular, aorist indicative passive. And then Jesus would be in predicate position to onoma. Name was called Jesus. Ta klethen hupa tu angelu, that which had been called by the angel. And now we've got another one of these constructions. And Andy, this is similar to like that b plus the infinitive. Pro tu plus the infinitive. This is good Septuagint Greek. It was also fairly good Hellenistic Greek as well. To be doing these subordinate clauses, not with participles. You'll notice there's no participle in this verse. But with the infinitive governed by the article. Pra, of course, takes the genitive. Therefore, the article, neuter article, ta, is to, because it's being governed by to. The infinitive, sil lame phthenai, cannot change form because it's an infinitive. So that would be before, I'm going to be wooden about this, before the act of being conceived, him is the subject in the womb. So the auton, loosely expressed, would be the subject of the infinitive. More exactly expressed, it's an accusative of respect, that the being conceived is being done with respect to him. So before he, here comes the smooth translation now, before he had been conceived in the womb. So let's go back and pick that all up. So his name was called Jesus, the one, the name, which had been called or said by the angel before he had been conceived in the womb. And of course, what you've got there, you notice there's a reference back. Go back to 159. 159. Now, 159 is the reference to the circumcision and naming of John, and that he's not John, named after his father, Zechariah. But it's kind of amazing to me that they do not have a side reference here. Go back further in chapter 1 to verse 31, 131. There's where the angel is talking to Mary and says, and you will call his name Jesus. And yeah, so I have no idea why they didn't cross-reference that particularly. I'm sure there is a cross-reference. Let me just check here. Do they have one to 59? No, they don't actually have one there. But that's the more immediate reference to this thing. So again, we have one sentence. We have two articular infinitives. The second one is governed by pra. That's why two. So I want to make sure you see the difference here. The two is being governed by pra in the last line. In the first line of the verse, the two is just going with the infinitive as a Hellenistic construction, which is the equivalent of the simple infinitive. So if you take your finger or your pencil or something and just cover up two, that would be the way classical Greek would have done it. But now they're using this special two construction. Then, thanks, Andy, that was good. That chi there now is picking up the vowel consecutive construction, indicating the main clause. And then you have that passive with the predicate accusative, well, now it's predicate nominative construction, Jesus. And then let me parse the a couple of other forms here, and then we'll quit. Klethen, now you don't see this often. This is a neuter participle. That is neuter, singular, nominative, aorist passive from kaleo. Klethais would be the nominative masculine, klethaisa the feminine, and klethen. Luthais, luthaisa, luthen. Those would be the forms. And remember, all passives are going to take hupa plus the genitive for the personal agent. And then sulemphthenai, the last infinitive, is an aorist passive infinitive from sulambano, which has the interesting double possible, not double sense, but the two possible meanings, which certainly are in different semantic fields, of to seize or to conceive a child. And in this one, it would be the latter. Okay.
Anyway.
I got my Greek New Testament back. This is really strange. It was in a box I sent away for right now 4.0 word processing thing. I had opened it up in my office when it came, took a look at what was inside, and I put it in that box so that when I took it home, it was in the box, and I decided to put the program on the machine last weekend, open up the box again, and there it is laying right in there. So, yeah, I'm okay with that. All right.